But today is VE Day. The war is
the
over.
The crown queen waves from the Belfry.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has landed.
Tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Baillie Gifford. Capital at risk.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to The Wealth Show. I'm Zach Sharif, a senior reporter at Citywire Wealth Manager, and I'm here with fellow reporter Natalia Vaznier. And today we're talking about M&A and investment opportunities in the wake of Trump's tariffs. We're joined by Ken Watson, Managing Director of Public Equity at Gresham House and Lead Manager for Strategic Equity Capital PLC. Ken, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
At the time of recording, the latest tariff updates are that global markets seem to be looking slightly more positive than at first. The FTSE was up again slightly today. My first question, I guess, is, you know, how have you been reacting to the recent turmoil and how have the companies that you invest in been approaching it?
I think it's important in these kind of periods of discontinuity and uncertainty, particularly when they're driven by big macro or geopolitical events, not to panic. You know, we have a investment process. It's based on the fundamentals of companies, and we try to stick to it. So we don't react and try and change things around materially just because there's a big sort of announcement on tariffs or anything else for that matter. And over the last few years, we've been through a lot of change and a lot of disruption with COVID and you know, a whole host of different macro and geopolitical events which have moved markets in the short term. We try to focus on the long term and try and fathom out what the fundamental impacts might be from some of these announcements on the individual companies. And you mentioned the companies themselves. What we try to do is keep close to the companies, talk to the CEOs, talk to the CFOs of these businesses, and understand how they're thinking about it. We're trying to back high quality, proactive management teams, ones that should be thinking ahead, working out the sort of second, third order impacts of issues that come along. And so just trying to get a sense for how they're thinking about it, how their customers are thinking about it. That gives a good, a sort of balanced view of what we should then do. So don't panic. Don't make big, rash, short-term decisions. Think about the companies and then try and react accordingly.
And were you expecting those tariffs? Like, did you make any changes prior to that? Or like you were saying, you're kind of long-term strategic investor.
Yeah, so were we expecting tariffs? Well, I think it was pretty well telegraphed by Trump, arguably for decades, but certainly sort of in the run-up to his election and subsequently, that tariffs were a tool he thought was kind of an important way to interact with other countries. So were we expecting tariffs? Yes. Did we expect the kind of the magnitude of some of the announcements that were made on Liberation Day? Absolutely not, and I don't think most people did either. So we hadn't specifically positioned for it because, again, we try always to build portfolios of companies that are not overly impacted by cyclical factors, that are not overly impacted by big geopolitical changes, and that's not to say they're immune, but we're trying to find a resilient set of companies that have a large part of their own destiny in their own control. So avoiding sectors that are very sort of exposed to big external factors like the oil price or foreign exchange, etc. And businesses that have some kind of structural tailwind that should support their growth, so they don't need the economies to be growing strongly for them to grow, or they've got self-help opportunities within their own business which can drive profit growth. And if we've got that right, then even though these companies will have at the margins be affected, and some of them may have specific impacts we hadn't thought of, on average, our portfolios should be more resilient and more robust in the face of uncertainty than the average company that we could be investing in. So we would expect to, whilst we might have short-term volatility in the share prices of the companies, we expect our companies to be able to navigate this situation better than most.
That's interesting. I'm interested in the conversations you've had, with those companies, over the last 2 weeks, because obviously it's all well and good saying don't panic, and everyone's trying not to, but at the same time, when you look at the news cycle, I often talk to wealth managers about them telling their clients not to panic, and their clients coming to them, you know, very worried and so on. How have those conversations been internally, and what is the key thing I think that you've been trying to focus on?
The key thing is identifying quickly if there are any specific acute vulnerabilities or risk factors that we hadn't thought of. So, you know, just asking the basic questions to the companies and hearing it from their own mouths is important, just to make sure we haven't missed anything when we've been evaluating companies, because the world's changed a bit. And then it's mostly about trying to think through the second and third order impact rather than the primary impact of tariffs. So the majority of our portfolio companies are either software or services businesses. So we don't have that many product-focused businesses, so they're not importing, exporting. They don't have a complicated supply chain, so that kind of component of the risks from tariffs is fairly limited for our portfolios. But we have businesses that are exposed to consumers. We have businesses that are selling either products or services to other businesses. And so consumer confidence and business confidence, you know, they are very important. And I think where I'd expect to see the kind of biggest risk of an issue for any of the companies would be either consumer confidence retrenching, and it's not been brilliant recently anyway, but retrenching even further, or sales cycles for B2B services and products elongating because people don't want to make major decisions when things are so uncertain. So that's our biggest exposure. And that's really what's come back from the companies we've spoken to, is that's what they're concerned about rather than the sort of direct impact of tariffs. And no one can predict exactly how this is all going to pan out. I can't, and maybe some clever macroeconomist can have a strong view, but our company CEOs are just trying to plan their businesses so they can be resilient and be agile enough to react if something does come and hit them.
And you're also the manager of the Gresham House UK Multi-Cap Income Fund. And you shared with us before that you kind of topped up on your Brooks kind of share in the result as a kind of result of the Trump's tariffs. And then we also noticed that you kind of have holdings of different wealth manager firms like Quilter and Schroders. Yeah. Why is that? Do you think those kind of companies are good within the current context of hedging volatility? What's kind of the reasoning behind that?
Yeah, so I mean, you're absolutely right. We have a significant number of positions that are associated with the wealth management sector. But those are not sort of changes tactically because of what's going on geopolitically. We have a long-term structural view that the wealth and advice sector in the UK is an attractive place to be, and there's long-term demographic support for and regulatory support for that can drive investment cases for businesses in that space. We've had a number of investments over the years in the area, some of which have ended up being subject to takeover offers. It's a sector, as well as the long-term structural drivers, that the short-term uncertainty in markets is partly to do with tariffs, but it's been pretty volatile prior to that. It's led to a substantial derating to the general financial sector in aggregate, and we feel that hasn't really differentiated between different businesses and kind of ones which are higher quality versus lower quality, ones which are more resilient, have better quality of earnings than versus ones which are more transaction volatile. And that's led to a great opportunity. So some of these wealth managers are trading at sort of historical low valuations. And importantly, they're trading at valuations which are at a really very material discount to the transaction multiples that we've seen in private markets or indeed public companies being taken private. So you have a big disconnect between the valuations we see in the UK, particularly at the smaller end of the market cap spectrum, and the multiples that private equity and trade consolidators are prepared to pay for companies that look very similar. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Brooks Macdonald as an example. It's a big strategic stake for us. It's the largest holding that we have in our investment trust strategic equity capital PLC. And as you said, we also own it in our open-ended funds. We're the largest shareholder there. And this is a fantastic example of what I've just been saying. So we think this is a good quality business that's gone through a lot of change, driven a lot of efficiency, invested in technology, improved its management team over the last 2 or 3 years. but the rating suggests that it's an ex-growth business, which will never recover. We don't think that's true. We think there's good evidence to support the view that this business will start to grow again in the near future. But the rating is between a half and a third of the rating of a whole host of different private market transactions for similar businesses. So we think the risk reward here is really attractive, because either the business starts to deliver growth, it gets, you know, it starts to get some momentum that leads to a re-rating on the stock market. Mm. And if that doesn't happen, then we think that the business is likely to be a very attractive takeover candidate.
And is that kind of like a trend that you're going to continue pursuing in the future, like investing in wealth management firm? Because we've also noticed there's quite a few sustainable wealth management firms that's been taken over the recent months. Do you think those are also interesting investment opportunities?
Yeah, look, I think the interesting thing is long-term growth drivers, low valuations because of what's going on in the wider world in particular the UK stock market. And the fact that there is a lot of consolidation going on in that end market. So all those things together, I mean, there's private equity interest, there's corporate strategic trade buyer interest in these businesses. And that gives you a really good, I guess, margin of safety on valuation. We absolutely don't want all our good quality companies being taken private, but we're financial investors and we're looking to make money for our investors. And so at the right price, we will obviously entertain companies being taken private. And the investment trust and the strategy we run there is very concentrated. We take larger equity stakes in a very selective group of businesses. We mentioned Brooks Macdonald. And part of the reason for doing that is that we're in that conversation. If there's an approach for a company, what we don't want to happen is that we're squeezed out at a price we're not happy with. But if we're the larger shareholder in the company, then it's pretty likely we will be in that conversation that the buyer will want us to kind of give them a formal indication of support to de-risk the transaction. And if the price is right, we'll do that. If the price is wrong, we won't do that.
And as you said, you know, there's a variety of factors going into the sort of economic climate for this approach. So, you know, where you can find these low valuations and have that sort of margin of safety. Mm-hmm. How long do you think that's going to last in the market?
Well, that's a very good question. If you'd asked me that 2 years ago, I'd have said these sort of valuation arbitrage opportunities, they don't stick around for very long. It's, you know, 6 months, maybe 12 mm-hmm. months. And it's been 2-3 years now. And so you know, a very valid question is, what's the catalyst to change that? But we are, as I said before, we're in the business of trying to make financial returns for our investors. And, you know, as long as things don't get taken private at really sort of absurdly low valuations and where we're disappointed with the outcome, if a takeover crystallizes and closes that valuation arbitrage, then we'll take advantage of that. I look at it as a point in time in the cycle. It's been driven by investment flows. It's been driven by market sentiment. It's been driven by sort of clustering and sort of concentration into US equities, which sort of appears to potentially be turning a little bit now. And all of that's driven valuation multiples in UK listed companies, particularly the smaller end of the market, to historically low levels. That's a great investment opportunity for active fund manager. And you know, we think that valuation gap will close one way or another. It will either get closed because the individual company delivers and gets re-rated by the market, or it'll get closed by M&A transactions and private equity or trade coming in, making offers for some of these companies, or we'll get a more general re-rating of this part of the market because that arbitrage just becomes too big or it's gone on for too long and money starts to flow back. Any of those going to deliver value for our investors.
And of course, with the swathe of sort of, you know, consolidation amongst those wealth firms, that's mm-hmm. got to be a factor at play there as well.
Yeah.
Because you're not the only game in town for looking for low valuations.
No, of course, and it's to do with there are big economies of scale in that market driven by regulation and technology and a whole host of other things. So that's one of the kind of reasons we're so sort of high conviction about this, mm-hmm. this part of the market.
That's interesting. And then, we're talking about kind of the M&A market in the UK. Do you feel like this kind of that momentum of investors coming into the UK market and bidding, do you think that momentum is going to continue over the long term? Because obviously we've seen kind of mainly in like the private equity space, deals have been coming down recently, kind of as a result of market volatility and obviously high uncertainty. Do you think that's like a trend that's going to continue?
So I think there's a few things sort of playing into this. The first one is what we've already been talking about, which is the low valuations of public companies. That makes them attractive. That de-risks the sort of investment case from a private equity point of view. The second thing is the huge amounts of money that's been raised by private equity funds over the last few years, much of which is still has to be deployed. And because of COVID, there was a sort of delay in deal activity, which has meant there's not only is there lots of money to be deployed, it's also overdue to be deployed. And so firms are having to get their investors to agree to extend fund lives and things like that. So that's eventually that's sort of pushes them to do more deals. There's been less private equity exits. So the one private equity firm selling to another, that's been pretty subdued over the last couple of years. And you know, that has focused everyone on the UK. So public companies are inherently, they are for sale every day if someone wants to make an offer for them. So those are deals which are able to be executed in a way that a private-to-private one might not if the seller's not willing to sell. So all of that has been kind of creating lots of activity in the public markets. To your point about the uncertainty, you know, I do expect in the very short term, given the tariff uncertainty and the huge volatility in the markets, not just the equity markets, but also the debt markets, I think that is likely to put a few transactions onto pause. And we saw that in COVID. There was a period where it was just huge uncertainty. No one's going to do any deals. But the deals which you started to see come out first were typically smaller deals, so sub £500 million enterprise value transactions. And the reason for that is that there's typically one private equity firm that's doing that deal. And if it needs debt financing, it's one debt provider. And so it's less complicated than a syndicate of private equity firms or, you know, a big, highly leveraged transaction for a larger company, which then has to be syndicated out and big investment banks have to go and sell that debt to debt investors. That took longer coming out of COVID to kind of free up and become normal. I would expect that to be the case again. So again, it sort of points you to smaller listed companies as the kind of easiest place to start. I know that's obviously where we focus.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, a lot of companies have sort of paused IPO plans and there's been a reticence there. How have you been positioned in that market and do you see it picking up?
So look, there's a cyclicality to this. So it is the case that there have been a larger number of takeovers and there's not been many IPOs. So the number of listed companies has been falling for not just in the UK, but more globally as well over the last two or three years. But there's a significant cyclical component to that. If you went back to 2021, which is not that long ago, it's only 4 years ago, 2021 was the biggest year in the UK markets for IPOs in terms of volume and funds raised in IPOs for 10 years. Now, that's 4 years ago. So you know, that was a peak of the market. And at that point, you had private equity firms selling businesses to the market through IPOs at pretty high valuations. If you'd invested in some of those IPOs then, you might have been sort of cursing it a bit when you look back on it now because the valuations were high at peak market. But some of those companies are good companies and they now look like pretty attractive value opportunities because they've fallen substantially from that IPO level. So I don't get too concerned about this sort of concept of de-equitization. And to your point about the IPO market, we are very active IPO investors or have been over the last sort of 10, 15 years. We think that our private equity approach and our network in private markets gives us an edge in trying to evaluate new companies when they come to the market. Often we've got touch points with them when they're private. But as you said, they've been few and far between. Having said that, I mean, literally you couldn't have timed this better because we have just backed our first IPO for a while, certainly our first one of this year, which is an accounting firm called MHA, which is part of the Baker Tilly network globally. And it's a partnership which has turned into a corporate and it's decided to list on the market because that's a way of sort of planning succession and providing equity incentives more widely across the organization. It's an area which you might not think that accounting, audit and tax is a particularly sexy area, but it does have high quality of earnings, good visibility, it's recurring income. And it's an area where private equity have actually been really quite active, and it's been driven by increasing regulation, the big four having lots of conflicts, and so sort of, lots of clients leaving, wanting to go to smaller firms. And so there's a lot of corporate and consolidation activity happening in that market. So we think it's quite an exciting space. The good thing is they were less sensitive on valuation than a private equity type transaction would be. So we've been able to invest at what we think it will be an attractive level, which means we've got multi-year sort of return opportunity from here. So IPOs are not exactly sort of prevalent, but this is an AIM listed IPO of a good quality business. It's profitable, it's growing in a sector we think is attractive. So perhaps all the angst about the AIM market may be slightly overblown.
And you're mentioning about this sector. Are there like other sectors that you're also seeing increasing opportunities given the current context?
Yeah, I think the context we have at the moment is because of where valuations are, there are lots of sectors where we think there's pretty compelling opportunities. So we're very discerning and selective about the specific companies we invest in. We have quite concentrated portfolios. We're taking a long-term view. But the areas we focus on, which would be technology, consumer, healthcare, particularly healthcare services, business services, and general financials, those areas, there are high quality businesses listed in the UK today in all of those sectors, trading at big discounts in terms of their valuations to where we think the long term opportunity is. So it's not specific kind of areas where we're really focusing. We're focusing on where the value is for good quality companies.
And it's interesting you mentioned there with the accountancy firm that completed an IPO, you're mentioning the burden of regulation on accountancy businesses. And of course, that's the same for wealth management firms. I was just interested to see how you see that going forward as a, you know, when you're making an investment decision, are you seeing an increasing burden of regulation, sort of thinking there's an opportunity here?
Well, I think there's a few kind of truths in investment. One of them is that there's kind of regulations only going one way, as in there's going to be more. So are there businesses that can play into that theme in a way, which is, so regulation, yes, it's a cost and a burden on businesses, but is also an opportunity to differentiate. So companies that are the right side of the regulation, that are sort of already implementing best practice in terms of their businesses, that are less prone to regulatory shocks, they're going to take market share. There's a kind of risk factor you have to try and evaluate, but there's also trying to identify businesses that have proactively invested ahead of the curve, that have got the right systems, the right processes, the right culture, and those that are likely to be the successful businesses in those regulated areas. And wealth management is absolutely sort of a classic example of that. So something like Brooks Macdonald, we believe that they are very, very high quality in terms of how they think about that whole risk. Whereas there's a number of consolidators, particularly in private markets, where private equity, particularly US private equity, have come in. They bought a platform business and they've done a whole host of acquisitions. And one of the biggest risks of acquiring businesses in a regulated area is that you buy something that's got a regulatory problem you hadn't spotted.
Yeah.
So with something like Brooks, that they're absolutely all over that as a risk. That doesn't mean they can never get something wrong, but we're really confident that culture and thinking about risk and governance and doing things properly means this is a very sort of resilient business in that space. And whereas some of the competitors may have a problem which will cause them to be on the back foot, they can't take on new customers. If that happens to a competitor, that's an opportunity for a business that's on the right side of it. So yes, it's an area we think can drive opportunities, but you just got to be quite careful about how you analyze it.
Do you think that wealth managers are growing more attuned to those risks? I mean, we've got there's a number of risks coming our way. They've got the ongoing advice review, consolidation review, and so on and so forth. So you mentioned Brooks, doing a great job there. Mm-hmm. But are you aware of that across the market as a commonplace?
Yeah, I mean, you've got to evaluate each business based on kind of what you can find out about it and what's publicly available, and speak to people in the industry, get a sense for how they're viewed by industry participants, not just the public markets. But regulatory sort of changes and issues in a sector can also create opportunities in themselves. So as an example, and you saw the SJP issues last year, that caused a huge sell-off in the share price temporarily. That there was then a bit of contagion across the sector. Something like Quilter they weren't able to, for quite a while, specifically quantify what they thought that the exposure might have been, because it was looking back at quite a few years and the sort of data was relatively difficult to pull together. So Quilter ended up trading at what we felt was a really compelling valuation multiple, partly discounting a uncertainty on that issue. And from talking to the company and lots of industry participants, we felt, you know, that yes, there was going to be an issue there, but it was, you know, ultimately containable, and that the share price was over discounting the risk factor. And so we felt that was a good opportunity to buy shares in Quilter, because it was trading at pretty compelling valuation. Loads of other things about the business are kind of going in the right direction, and that was a bit of an overhang. So, you know, all these things are kind of balancing risk and reward when you evaluate a company.
Well, Ken, that seems like a perfect note to end on. Thank you so much for joining us. You've been listening to The Wealth Show with myself, Zach Sharif, and Natalia Vaznier. Today, we were joined by Ken Watton, Managing Director of Public Equity at Gresham House and Lead Manager for Strategic Equity Capital PLC. For any questions, please feel free to email us at wmnews@citywire.co.uk. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Today is VE Day. The war is
over. The newly crowned queen waves from the balcony.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has
tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth: cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Baillie Gifford. Capital at risk.